Blog Talk Radio.
Thing.
Yo, look at Grinch with some stupid bell-bottom pants, man.
Your shoes, man, they make you look like a fool.
Word!
While you dive, turkeys, I'll knock you through Sunday and be waiting for you on Monday. You're too young to have seen the sights of Esther, Mammy, and Pappy about Dolomite.
Planet Earth was my place of birth, born to be the sole controller of the universe. Beside the part of the map, I hit first. Any environment I can adapt. When it gets worse, the rough gets going, the going gets rough. When I start blowing the mic, mic bust. The next day to shake from the power I generate. People in Cali used to think it was earthquakes. Times is hard on the boulevard, so I vote guard and never get scarred. I'm scarred, but it seems like I'm locked in hell. Looking over the edge, but the R never fell. A trip to slip, cause my knife got gripped. Stand on my own 2 feet and come equipped. Any stage I'm seen on, a mic I fiend on. I stand alone and need nothing to lean on. Going for self with a long way to go. So much to say, but I still flow slow. I come correct and I won't look back. Cause it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even
nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
I learned to relax in my room and escape from New York and return through the wound of the world as a thought. Thinking how hard it was to be born. Me being queen with no physical form. Playing yourself with one destination to reach the best part. It's life's creation. 9 months later, a job well done. Make way, cause here I come. Since I made it this far, I can't stop now. There's a will and a way, and I got the know-how to be all I can be and more, and see all there is to see before. I'm called to go back to the essence. It's a lot to learn, so I study my lessons. I thought the ghetto was the worst that could happen to me. I'm glad I listened when my father was rapping to me. Cause back in the days, they lived in caves. Exiled from the original man and strayed away. Now that's what I call hard times. I'd rather be here to exercise the mind. Then I take the thought around the world twice. From knowledge to going back to knowledge precise. Across the desert, that's hot as the Arabian. But they couldn't cave me in, cause I'm the Asian. Reaching for the city of Mecca, visit Medina. Visions of Nefertiti, then I seen her. Mind keeps traveling, I be back after. I stop and think about the brothers and sisters in Africa. Return the thoughts through the eye of a needle. For miles I fought and I just brought the people. Under the dark skies, on the dark side. Not only there, but right here in the park side. So now is the time for us to react. Take a trip through the mind and when you get back, understand your third eye, seen all of that. It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even the...
Nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
Even
now. Nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
No more props, I want property in every borough. Nobody's stopping me because of several rhymes I make. Give me real estate for me to own. Wherever I bless a microphone. 007 is back and relaxing. On point and reacting and ready for action. I'm so low-key that you might not see me. Incognito and taking it easy. I just kept on a hush-hush in front of a crowd. I get loud as a bone rush for calm. Keep a low pro and play the background. Over the whack, rapper put the mic back down. So rip it, break it in half, go ahead and slam it. Cause when it's time to build, I'm a mechanical bonding, amending, attaching and blending. So many solos, there is no ending. People in my neighborhood, they know I'm good. From London to Hollywood, wherever I stood. Footprints remain on stage ever since. Sidewalks and streets, I leave fossils. And then, when I had sex, I left my name on next. My trademark was left throughout the projects. I used to get rich when I played CeeLo. When I roll 4, 5, 6, they go veto. So I collect my cast and slide. I got my back, my guns on my side. It shouldn't have to be like that. I guess it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even the...
Nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
I'm from the...
I want you to stay in school and be cool. If you fight, you're going to have to answer the Dolomite.
What's that? Like some old geek guy or something.
This is Petty Officer.
Mm-hmm.
In this jungle, jungle, oh, warrior music, oh. Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem, the problem. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves to prepare for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
they give thanks to the one for truth to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. Me get a flat down the road to me car overload. Me have no spear on my phone battery empty. Maybe to me raga raga me sure never press. People drive past now help me. And the ones who pretend to care, them just all about the money, yeah. Here comes the cops who want to kick me. Ain't nothing but this no funny. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves so prepare for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
they give thanks to the one for truth to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle,
things I never ever would have seen.
Many true characters concealed. Flattering lips with smiling faces. Pass them all the while in different places. In this jungle, everyone seems to have a need in agenda. Hey. So why you hunting for mine? Now go on like some blind. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves so prepare for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
they give thanks to the one for truth to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle, 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 jungle. Up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem, the problem. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves so prepare for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
they give thanks to the one for truth to life.
Jungle,
jungle, the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
they give thanks to the one for truth to life.
Jungle,
jungle, the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle.
This young lady right there.
I'd like to make a comment, Mr. Malcolm. Now, you're right, of course, the black people are in the worst. They have had the worst treatment. But isn't it also possible that if the white people, the poor people, the people down in my neighborhood, the white people, those that don't work, those that are on welfare, those that have nothing, if they got together too, and you help us, we'll help you. You help us get up there. You help us get rid of some of these people that are pressing down on us.
No, I say you should be just as active in your neighborhood as we're trying, as you have been in our neighborhood.
All right, we get our neighborhood still hot. Everybody's going for something. We alone, there are too few of us. There are too many men up there with all their cop cars and everything.
That's what they're always telling you. Never let your enemy tell you how many of you there are. Never let the man that you're against form your opinion. This is the trick that's played on everyone who's oppressed. The first thing, an occupation, when you have a revolution in the country, the first thing you take over is the radio. And then you start telling the people that everybody, the war is over. And so all of them surrender. No, they believe that thing right there. And once they take that over, they start telling you where you are and where they are, and you fall right in line. It's plain thought control. The majority of the American people aren't segregationists. That the majority of the American people aren't imperialists. But the government is, the structure is, the power faction is. So, how then do all the majority go along with it? Because those who sit in power over the television, over the radio, and over the press is constantly telling those who are the masses how free they are, and how this they are, and how that they are. So a mistake is made on your part when you think that white people suffer the same as black people. Or as many Jews will say, well, we're a minority too. Or the Irish will say, well, we used to be a minority. No one's a minority like we are. They didn't need civil rights legislation to solve any other minority problems. It didn't take a civil war to solve any other minority problem. It didn't take Supreme Court decisions to solve any other minority problem or legislation. It takes none of that other kind of that action to solve the minority problems of these other people. The only real minority in America is the Afro-American. Now, when white people, who are oppressed and poor, supposedly, but the poorest white person can go where the richest black person can't go. It isn't only poverty of in money that we're talking about. Poverty in spirit, poverty in freedom, poverty in equality, poverty in human dignity. This is the kind of poverty we're suffering from. So that the richest Negro in this country is still poor. When it comes to freedom, he's broke. When it comes to human dignity, he's broke. This is the kind of poverty we're talking about. So when you find white people who are poor, with all these doors that there are open to them, any door that you knock on, if you're qualified, it'll open. So when you find a poor white person, he's in bad shape. He's in bad shape.
Peace. I'm called Professor X, the Overseer. In the early 1900s, a brother set out on voyage. His mission, black nationalism. His oath, freedom or death. In the 60s, brothers like Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, the mission, black nationalism. The oath, freedom or death. In the 90s, the mission, black nationalism. The Messengers, X-Clan. The Movement, Black Watch. The Oath, Freedom, or Death. By the way.
Freedom or death, you shall all be moved. Vanglory, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green. With the key, city.
Abracadabra. I'll a baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word, a sick called verb, a black steel nerve, teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really? Then they label me a sin when a brother just speaks what's within. I guess I'm blacker than the shadow in the darkest alley that they're always scared to go in. Boo! I wear boots and beads, bags and braids, stick and scroll, raise the shade, walk in the light of the moon, but I've never been a Batman. African, call it black man. Brother, extract the African steps in your movement. Enhance for improvement. Grand funk. I knew a home for the phrase. Funk and lesson, the pathway.
Ready or not, yeah, we
and cornbread. How can you act this? I exist on a plane where the jar is my brain. I'm living to retrieve cells and ten on my stick. Picture bigger, native liquor figure. The pull of the trigger goes boom, not boom. Not a bunch of sissies, but saviors braver. The red, black, and green is just so much more than red, black, and green. You ask what I mean, but yet the sundown shades and lights of dream. Watch too late, oops, upside your head. You drop through a bit like lead. Where you going? What's your speed? What's your pleasure? What's your need? Trees and branches, roots and seeds. Forward, backwards, many degrees. Questions, answers, what's have come.
Out of the darkness in panther skin comes darkness, driving pink caddies, bearing the remedy to your existence. Yes, it gets blacker with a Nat Turner lick. Martin, Adam, Malcolm, Huey, there's a party at the crossroads.
Put some ghetto D with Nappy in my tank. Bitch, this ain't the slave days. Us niggas gon' fight back. You crackin' stuff like that. All up in the magazine. Put me on a TV screen and I'm gon' say the same thing. You can call me racist. Black man in this white world. I'm sick of seeing sellout niggas married to these white girls. Knowing they the enemy. Can't never be no friend to me. I just get my dick sucked. Nut in their mouth instantly. They ain't nothing but freak show. You feel that's what you need though. While you off at work or something, she fuck one of your people. Now you want to kill something. Pull off you and OJ. If you ain't got the dream team and you ain't winning your case, I get up all in your face and call you a straight house nigga. I know you gon' press charges on me with my pistol off in your mouth, nigga.
It's all to maintain the life mentality. If it be a tragedy, some white will come and have me. Gon' slam me down and rouse me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. It's all to maintain the life mentality. If it be a tragedy, some white will come and have me. Gon' slam me down and rouse me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up.
Black man kill a black man, coolly loving that. Black man kill a white man, they sentencing him to death. White man kill a black man, then scream about self-defense. Break it down to manslaughter with all of the evidence. Ever since I've been here, been nothing but sin here. I done backed about the game just to pursue my career. So I'ma say this loud and clear. Motherfuck the white man. Ku Klux Klan talk shit, but they don't want to start shit. Niggas today ignorant, fessing my left generation. Sweet triggers with no hesitation. When I kind of the altercation, rapping is my occupation, but I still ride with my pistol though and drop the top low low so I can feel a wind blow. Pull up on side of white folks, smile, show every goal I got. Smoking on some sticky sticky, but y'all like to call it pop. Young black man calling shots, middle finger to all the cops. Suck a nigga dick pulling your Glock out for a traffic stop.
It's all to maintain social life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and house me. Gon' slam me down and rouse me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. It's all to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and house me. Gon' slam me down and rouse me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. It's all to maintain soldier life mentality.
That they can do anything they want you to. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
Fred. Black Power, Black Power, Black Nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, myself, and our engineers on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, National Minister of Communication. Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, the social engineering of black youth. If you want to get in or have any questions, concerns, or comments about tonight's topic, please be sure to press 1. We're going to open up our lines to our national chair, Nat Turner. All power to the people, Yahuru. Free them all. Can you hear me, comrade?
Right on, brother. Right on, right on. Yeah, you're right, man. All power to the people. That's power. What's up? Right on, too. Free them all, you know. We'll try to pick up from last week. And we try to make it a habit to, let people know what's going on with us, you know, as a revolutionary organization. Couple of ticks ago, our radio show was sabotaged again by the powers that be. Till we can wrest the power out of their hands on a protracted struggle. So what some refer to as the part of the oppressors or the proponents of what's referred to as unconventional warfare. And I'm not speaking in the abstract or rhetorically, but just realistically, this is the lot that we find ourselves in, struggling as a group of people who have to deal with race, class, and black women, have to deal with sexism. You know, on the larger kick, you know, other so-called non-white, black and brown people. We touched on a lot of things last week, dealing with the social engineering of black youth. Something that I had come across my mind, and being in a constant thought of my people as a revolutionary, the young people, particularly black male youth, and something I had wrote down, social engineering of black male youth. But include our youth in general, male and female. We focus on one part of the propaganda wing of the state, using visual images in this country. We've been socialized and conditioned on images. Images of everything. And these commercials, these high-tech, subtle commercials that are being produced by the corporations and the companies, these so-called Fortune 500 companies that represent the business aspect of the state. What do we mean by the state? Politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police who work in concerted effort to keep the present structure intact. And based on white male patriarchal rule, the judge backs them in the so-called legal arena. And, of course, the police that the Black Panther Party had learned to identify as the pig is the first line of defense in the capitalist structure, in the capitalist system, in this capitalist regime, in this capitalist dictatorship. Usually that term has been applied by the capitalists to those who are non-aligned or those who refuse to get in line with the whims of the American empire. And rightfully so, to be able to dictate their own affairs of state. And I want to add something here. I recently seen this commercial, one of the newer commercials that has been produced by those who, constantly bombarding our youth with consumerism. And, those of us who see the lack of economic prowess, economic infrastructure, economic enfranchisement as opposed to economic disenfranchisement as a huge part of the problem. There are those who may world the perception that it is the problem. But the consumerism factor on the part of the corporations and the companies dealing with sports apparel, creating these commercials that comes off as hip, these hip commercials where they go and recruit young people to blend in with a so-called basketball star, NBA star. Of course, this is basketball season, and so all the stops are pulled out, no holds barred, But this new commercial that I seen, this recent one rather, it features Jason Tatum, who played for the Boston Celtics, you know, the star player of the Boston Celtics. He, along with about four or five of the brothers in this commercial. And in this commercial with these brothers, there's this one person in this commercial, and this one person is the other, and this one person is a white girl. Okay, the white, she's not only a white girl, but she's a white girl who just happens to have blonde hair. And the way her hairstyle is two braids, you know, down the side, you know. And so if you pay careful attention to this commercial, the setup, the whole thing, the whole, you know, scheme of who's supposed to end up where, you know, in the commercial and when the commercial is going off. Jason Tatum obviously is the, you know, featured person in the commercial. You know, he's, you know, he does his thing. He has the basketball, and then he says some words at the end. And to his right and left, you know, the brother's standing to his right and left, and the white girl is, if you're looking at the screen, she's on the left. Now, some may think that this is rather, you know, that this is a reach. But Jason Tatum is light-skinned, and the other brothers are darker than him, and the one on the end is, appears to be darker, you know, the darkest or one of the darkest ones. And he's standing to the left if you face on the screen to tell him that he's on the left. And next to him is the white girl. Now, the cameraman, when he's, you know, filming this commercial, there's a thing that he does where he zooms in. He zooms in the camera real quick. You know, he zooms in, like, right? And that's what he does with the white girl. Now, he zooms in the camera with the white girl, a quick shot zooming, and then that's it. Now, the effect of that is supposed to be one. It's supposed to be an effect on it. So, naturally, you know, a lot of black male youth who aspire, you know, to become the next Michael Jordan and whatnot, you know, the next LeBron and so forth, you know, they're going to, you know, they're drawing into this commercial. It was a thing I remember a long time ago referred to as animal magnetism. and I may not still be clear on exactly what animal magnetism necessarily is. But one of the things that come to mind, you know, when you say animals, like, yo, you know, man, you know, it's like an animal, you know what I'm saying? Man, he's like an animal, you know, it's a beast. And when you be saying these terms, we don't recognize and realize what we're actually saying here. But animal magnetism, you know, and so the effect on the young lions, and I love the way the brothers, you know, the way the Rasta brothers refer to our young brothers as young lions and stuff, you know, that's what they are. But this is a desired effect. And as you know, we talked about last week, the desired effect is to project whiteness onto our young black males. And so to precondition them, so by the time they become young adults and adults, so some of them may go on, one of them might go on the next, be the next, whatever, you know. And then it's an automatic pilot from there on out, you know. And you see this in college football today, like, you know, noticeably, like some of the, you know, newer cats who have been in the NBA and whatnot, sure, for a number of years. They marry, you know, their partners are white females and stuff. And you know, I've heard the, you know, the line before about, you know, man, you know, love don't have a color, and man, you can't help who you love and whatnot. I understand all of that, but there's also an artificialness to it. There's also a mechanical factors to it, and it is very noticeably. And it may be, you know, maybe, you know, sister too will listen and you know, will agree. But I remember over the years, you know, we've had these conversations, though, coming up, and a lot of sisters, they felt some kind of way about that, and you know, they expressed themselves, and you know, they can see things too. But that's the desired effect, to keep projecting whiteness onto the black mind, the black psyche, the black the psychological effects on young black males to precondition them. And by the time, like I said, you know, they get to be adults, and they, you know, black women to a certain extent become invisible. They only become invisible until the shit hit the fan. They only become invisible until when, you know, the niggas get in trouble. You know, then especially if it's some racial thing, you know, or the pig or the company or the job or whatever the case may be, you know, on the college campus or something, then, you know, there's this thing, you know, where they're looking for black women to come to the rescue or come support them, you know, which, you know, is insane. How can you not be conscious of black women when the lake is calm, but when the lake is rough, then you can be conscious of black women? You know what I'm saying? I've been in places I shouldn't have been, you know, coming up. You know, I've seen a lot of things. I could have done a whole lot of things, could have done a whole lot of bad shit. You know what I'm saying? Or been mixed up in the wrong sets and whatnot, you know, just, you know, just completely gone, you know. But, you know, the effect is so crucial, you know, so crucial that even to the point where it affects black male youth's response or reaction to young black females themselves. You know, another aspect of it is you know, you grow up, you become an adult or whatever, you know, you end up on paper, you know. You know, some, you know, may a half, you know, full of them, like I said, you know, end up being the next superstar, what have you. It could be music or whatever, you know what I'm saying, on the big screen, you know. And the one thing that I think may get overlooked or left out the conversation is the economic impact that it would have on black women. You know, the dollars going elsewhere or outside of the Klan, you know, to the other, you know. I can remember Charles Barkley, for example, and some other, you know, athletes that played sports back in the 90s and what have you. And, you know, you rich and, you know, you end up, you know, with a white woman, then that means she has access, you know, to your money. You know what I'm saying? And I've you know, over the years, you know, it's been said that that money could have went to black women, to a black woman, you know. And we take a historical look, a real close analysis of since physical slavery. We can see that black women have been, you know, our backbone in a sense. That is the moral to the story for those who may be familiar with Isis and Osiris story, and those who may not be familiar with the Isis and Osiris story, how Osiris had been betrayed and murdered by his brother, whose name was Set, and that after he betrayed him, he murdered his brother, and he took his brother's body and, you know, you chop it into different three pieces, 15 pieces, and the numbers are subliminal numbers, way deep kind of meaning behind the numbers. But anyway, you know, his body was chopped into pieces and, you know, strewn all over the world and whatnot. And so Isis, of course, you know, she mourned his death and stuff like that, you know, that was her king and whatnot, and, you know, she was his queen. And so what she did was she set out to, you know, seek and find, you know, parts of his body, you know, to bring him back, to reconstitute him. And that's what she did. So she found all the 14 parts of his body except his private part. And so what she did was she had took some earth, some clay, whatnot, and molded, you know, with private part and attached it to him and recited these magical rituals and brought him back to life. There's more behind the whole story. In essence, what they were saying was, this is what our women do for us. This is what they have been doing for us. historically. And so even here in the bowels of America, same thing, you know. And I wanted to, add that on to this because of the psychological impact that it has on black women, that a lot of times that we, you know, some of these things that should be front line, headline, or what have you, a lot of times they're black women's issues, the things that black women go through here in America. But that is the net result of that commercial. It's designed to have an impact on the black male youth. Of course, you know, grow into adulthood, young adulthood, and whatnot. And you can look and you see the commercial. You can see the look, you know, on the white girl's face, like she has this look on her face. And of course, I don't know who she is. I don't know. But she's in the commercial, and she's in that commercial for a reason. And a number of other things come to mind. But I was a betting man. I bet that, of course, just her being in the commercial with Jason Tatum is like, you know, awesome, you know, like, you know, whatnot, you know. And it may be on the strength of him, you know, she might end up, you know, blasting off, you know, how some of these persons have come out of so-called nowhere, you know, got notice on something or whatever, and end up, you know, in movies and videos and commercials all over the place or stuff like that, you know. It's a very crucial commercial. The imagery, like I said, I was thinking about the old King Kong movie. And when the movie King Kong was produced, you know, the poster for the movie, you know, you go to the old theaters, you know, they have the poster in the glass case and whatnot, you know, their promotional thing. And what do you see, you know, this thing with a big black ape holding in the grasp of his hand, the white woman, I believe in a white dress, you know. I remember seeing that as a boy, and I can remember coming up as a teenager in my young adult stages, that had come up, that conversation had been made about that it was no coincidence that poster was made like that, you know. And so here's this big black ape who's head over heel, who's has this infatuation with a white woman in a white dress, you know. I remember the imagery from those with, you know, the generation before mine, where Marilyn Monroe, you know, in this picture where they took the picture, I believe, I think it was a fan or something, and, you know, the blower dressing, they would take these pictures and photos of stuff like that, you know. And there's, I believe there's a rock artist named Pink, or pop artist named Pink. I think she may have redone that, you know, that little thing or whatever. But all these things, you know, we'll overlook them, and wondering why, you know, sometimes, you know, we're not clearly thinking, which means being clear in our actions as black men collectively, you know, and on the backs of the, you know, this King Kong picture, the Europeans have a habit of remaking things, you know, generational, you know. And as a matter of fact, I was thinking about, you know, the King Kong thing, and got home and, you know, flicked television on, and right now as we speak, Kong Skull Island is on television as we speak now, and I kind of laughed to myself, you know. But in more recent times, the subtle remaking of that imagery, using LeBron James, you know, using LeBron James in a photo shoot, I believe it was for GQ or one of those magazines, for the cover. And so what some genius did was get LeBron, cast a white woman in a white dress and dressed LeBron in dark clothes, you know, the dark, you know, I guess the dark T-shirt, you know, the sleeveless T-shirt, I believe, and the shorts, you know, like the long shorts, so to speak. And he's given a basketball, and if you've seen the, you know, like those Mr. Universe contests, you know, with the bodybuilders and how they, you know, they, you know, they flex their muscles, like, you know, you see LeBron in the photo doing like that, and he got the basketball on the one underneath his arms. Now, the whole subtle message was actually to redo the King Kong, you know, when the ape gets angry, you know, it beats his chest, but it, you know, sort of like, you know, flexes his muscle, like, you know. and this is what the whole scheme was behind that photo shoot. Now, it got out somewhat in the grapevine or the social world or whatever, and LeBron got wind of it, and he vehemently denied that was the case. Wouldn't take a rocket scientist to obviously figure that out. You know, I mean, after all, why would, who was the person that created the photo shoot in the first place? Well, let me back up. Who was the person that actually came up with the idea of doing the photo shoot using LeBron James? And then finding him a partner to be in the photo shoot with. And then the person who controls the wardrobe. You dig? So it's no coincidence that she has white on and he has dark clothes on, verging from what would be probably midnight blue or navy to black, and holding a basketball. And this is the type of psychological war, you know, that black women are subjected to. And why I say black women? Again, I say black women because black women are made to be invisible. They're made to be discarded. They're made to be disregarded. You know, under attack using visual imagery. And, of course, the blonde-haired white woman and whatnot, you know, this blonde-haired, blue-eyed thing or whatever, this old saying about beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Well, who is the beholder? You know, it's the question. Who has been the beholder? The European has been the beholder since day one for ruling and controlling reasons. This is why black people have come up, you know, as a result of the psychological impact of physical slavery, referring to, you know, our hair texture as nappy hair. You know, whereas someone who doesn't have nappy hair, they have good hair. They have fine hair, you know, fine features, as opposed to the wide nose and the thick lips, you know. And we wonder why the young people are out there doing what they're doing. We don't make these kind of connections with part of the conditioning. Which leads to these, you know, these material concrete conditions, you know, these brutal realities and whatnot, you know, low self-esteem, you know, the other who has been made to be anything other than human, anything other than civilized, anything other than beautiful, so to speak, you know, and it's a constant, there's a constant struggle and a constant battle against these opposing forces, which mean us no good, you know, which mean us no good at all. You know, the campaign about kill them before they grow, you know, with the boys, you know, kill them before they grow, to precondition them, you know, when they're in kindergarten, about some pig named Officer Friendly, you know, to precondition your child, your son, your daughter, to when they grow up to respect authority, authority figures. One has to rely on authority figures in order to understand that the Egyptians were black, anything but black, And this huge psychological impact, the social engineering of black youth, so crucial. It is a lot that I can add here or try to bring into tonight's show. And so much sometimes it may not come totally to the surface, but I wanted to add that before we switch over into the impact that social engineering has on black female youth, who one day have to grow up and be young adults, and later on in life as full-fledged adults, they get, in their 40s and whatnot, and on into their 50s, and what type of mind will they have when they reach that that age? With girls, of course, the imagery, I talked about mentioned the thing about the nappy hair and the psychological impact that it has had more probably on black females, in terms of hair and whatnot. Some sisters have liberated themselves from that aspect of the war on black females. There's even some sisters who understand it, and they have, little girls, or girls or whatnot, and they lock their hair up. You get them to understand that something made you that way, and every facet of you was designed for a reason, and every facet of you has a relationship with nature, by the way. And this is the type of thing that gets left out. And we would be rather foolish to believe that the state, through its, Conrad says, public fool system, will give that kind of teachings or instructions in the classroom, unless we, verge on Garveyism, opening our own institutions to teach our children properly. There's so many different angles that we can come from, and it's been an ongoing conversation, about establishing our own institutions and teaching, knowledge itself to our girls and letting them know what type of world that's outside, those doors or whatnot, but if you look into the, the media world, through cinema, what would come to mind as we speak, right now? There's been this bombardment of white female superheroes as of late, over the past number of years. And some will say, they did give us a black Mother Nature, featuring Halle Berry. I believe I forget the character's name, Storm or something like that, whatever, these old cartoons from back in the day, you know, and they had Flash, you know, he was a long black person, because, you know, Flash, I mean, he's Flash like lightning, but the whole pun behind it was that, you know he moves fast, he runs fast, you know, he's like, he equated his speed with how fast lightning moves, so he just got to be called Flash, and so that was out. We're gonna let the nigga play this part, right, because no white man can't do this, it just seems so out of place, you know what I'm saying, we'll let them have that right there. But but it's very subtle. It's very subtle, the role that Halle Berry played. As a matter of fact, her own background in cinema as well, that we you know, are conscious of too. Some of us are very conscious of how Halle Berry could only win the Oscar for playing in Monsters Ball. You know, beyond any other thing that she ever, any other movie or whatever, her whole acting career or whatever. But that was the one, you know, that she would win the Oscar for playing a character. And let's look at it. You know, you have a black woman that's in distress. She's the damsel in distress here in this movie. Has a partner who's on death row and has, of course, a son who now is without a father. And I believe what's-his-face, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Sean Combs, whatever he called himself, played that role. In the meantime, it's like one of these rural areas and whatnot. And, you know, she works, you know, she slaves on the plantation, you know, and she walks home, you know, alongside the road. You know, a lot of people do that in those rural areas in the country. They walk home from work, and they walk miles, a couple of miles, you know. And so here she is, you know, walking home. And it was so obvious as to where it was going. You know, it was so obvious, you know. And here you see the white shared pig coming along, just so happened to come along in his car, you know, and offers her a ride home, you know. And who is this pig sheriff's dad? Well, the pig sheriff's dad is an old racist Ku Klux Klan white boy, you know, in the movie, you know. And I'm telling you, you know, it took a mind to come up with those characters. You know? You ask yourself, if you had the opportunity to make a movie, what would that movie be? What would it be about, you know? So the mind that the person had to create these characters, what was the objective of the movie in the first place? Like, what was the goal? You know, what was he trying to achieve by the movie? You know what I'm saying? Besides the obvious parallels of white male raping of a black woman, you know, in the scene where you know, she invites him inside and whatnot. And, you know, the thing where, you know, I've heard say that, you know, women who, you know, are very vulnerable over, let's say, a terrible breakup or divorce or what have you, you know, being lonely and stuff like that, right? You know, their nature and whatnot. And so it was obvious, you know, where it was going. But the scene, you know, where it gets, you know, intense, like, you know, when he's ripping her underwear off and whatnot, you know, and he takes her and he, you know, I mean, it's amazing, and that's subtle rape in the movie, that's subtle rape, and that's the subconscious, the psyche, and that is carried over from the plantation, you know, it's just in a movie, you know, and you know, a lot of so-called African-Americans didn't take that scene too kind. And originally, role was offered to Angela Bassett, who played How Stella Got a Groove Back, right? man, I can't make this shit up. It cannot be coincidence, you know. But anyway, to my understanding, that role was originally offered to Angela Bassett, and Angela Bassett turned that rule down. And just simply saying in so many words, I'm not going to, you know, disgrace myself on the screen, you know, with that kind of scene. You know, I'm not going to, you know, degrade myself, you know, in a movie. And I don't need a career in acting that bad. And so they went to Halle Berry, you know. Now, Halle Berry, I believe at one point was or still is married to a white man. And I believe, of course, Halle Berry's mom is white and her dad's black, you know. And why am I saying all these things? I'm saying all these things because of the social engineering of black female youth. And we overlook these things. We go overlook them. You know, in other words, black female youth, they can't see a black man being their hero. They can't see a black man being their Santa Claus, you know, let alone the black man as being, when they close their eyes and imagine God, they see a white man. You see, and so here the white pig sheriff comes to the rescue of the damsel in distress and saves the day, while her black partner, her black king, is in prison on death row. So what they're saying to you, your king is dead, and I am your man now. And so in the subconscious, you internalize that as young people, then somehow, some kind of way, it transfers over into your subconscious when you become an adult. And then brothers is looking at these women, and some of us come away saying, you know, she fucked up. You know, on those ones, she fucked up in the mind. You know, she messed up. You know what I'm saying? She tripping. You know, shit like that. But you can't see the forest for the trees or the predicate. You know, and they teach you that in school. And you know, in English class, they teach you that in school. You know, what's the predicate? You know what I'm saying? What not, right? That is the whole thing. And you see other movies, you know, like with Halle Berry. You know, you see this pattern, this sort of thing, right? But the one movie that they put her in, man, that movie always escaped. Bulwark, I believe, was her first big movie. And before that, it used to be this hour drama used to come on, you know, on CBS back in the, you know, the 80s and whatnot. And it was called Notch Landing, you know, and the other big time one, but it was actually two, but, you know, this other one was called Dallas, you know, with this, you know, the rich white, you know, who shot JR, you know, and whatnot, right? And that was Halle Berry's first, I believe, acting gig, where they put her on Knots Landing. And I ain't gonna lie, when I first saw her, I was like, man, this is, I mean, incredibly beautiful black woman, you know? And so, you know, I was just out of curiosity, I was watching it because I wanted to see what it was going to go with her character. And so what happens is she ends up, you know, kind of developing this thing for the old white man. You know, he's like the big time star in Knots Landing, right? And so she, you know what I'm saying? And so, see, that's not coincidence. That's not coincidence. Who was your daddy? You see, you can't see a black hero, you know, a black knight in shining armor. And we wonder why our young females are out there doing the things they're doing. And we holding them responsible, totally responsible, and totally accountable. But we don't want to look at the psychological impact of being socially engineered to see anything except yourself. You know? And so in the 70s, the 80s, but I know in the 70s, they created the character Wonder Woman, right? And the white girl, I forget her name, And I believe there's this white girl at one point in time, I think she had won a Miss America pageant, something like that, right? So they were, you know, here's this beauty, you know, in the eyes of the beholder, the thing, the standard of beauty. You know, she had these blue eyes and whatnot. She wasn't blind hair. You know, I can't think of her name, but anyway, she played Wonder Woman. And, you know, like my brothers are saying today, you know, she hot. You know, like that's the end thing to say when you refer to it. Oh, she hot. Yeah, you know, and you see the shit like she's hot. You know what I'm saying? Whatnot, right? So that was the thing. So they took her and they projected her onto black girls then, you know, as Wonder Woman. Now, it's sort of feminist, you know, because her character, she had these gold wrist bracelets on, right? Bracelets on. And she could, excuse me, she was fast enough, quick enough to block, you know, bullets, you know, somebody trying to shoot her, right? And but that was the character then, you know. And so, you know, black girls were supposed to internalize her, and therefore they couldn't see their mamas, you know, as their sheroes. You know what I'm saying? And they're preconditioned, so the time they get to be young adults and whatnot, or teenagers later, and they go on later on in life and they can't see, men, period, in a sense, you know, the attitude about being independent, you know, and so forth, right? Even Lil' Kim, you know, has been so affected, you know, in her own way, you know, in the environment. You look at her as an example, sort of an example. You know, the type of psychological impact, social engineering of young black women, you know. In one of her songs, she was saying, you know, she got, you know, I got my own big gets in one of the songs, you know, and she was very talented. I mean, a lyricist, very, very, very talented, beautiful, very talented sister, you know. But you could look a little Kim and like, you know, you see the effects of what we're talking about here. They created this character, and then, you know, they, you know, now you see it today, you know, they remade, you know, Wonder Woman, right? And now they got this new shit, something about Marvel or Super Marvel, something, the white girl, featuring a white girl. And then you have, now they brought Barbie to the big screen, you know, starring this Australian actress named Margot Robbie right now. That wasn't Margot Robbie's first rodeo. She played in two other movies that I can remember. And one of those movies she played in was called Focus. And this movie Focus starred who? I can't make this shit up. This can't be no coincidence. That movie featured Will Smith, and the movie was shot in New Orleans, right? And it's rather ironic that the title of the movie would be called Focus. What they did was they sort of played around with the title of the movie. They sort of toyed around with the title, Focus, right? Now, the objective was to get the viewer to see that he's trying to get her to focus on how to pull jobs, right? But the subtle message behind it was actually her character. And so this is why the creator of the character, the mind behind the character, shot the scene when they were at I think it was a big party or a ball or some type of thing that was going on. And so it was no coincidence that they let her walk down the spiral staircase or twisting staircase or, you know, whatever, with a red dress on. And he's sitting down, and what happens? That's the real focus. That's the true reason why it's called focus. That's the hidden one. Like in this world, there's two Bibles. Get this. There's two Bibles. There's an esoteric Bible and an exoteric Bible. Now, the masses of the people have the exoteric Bible. Exoteric just simply just means the outer Bible, the external one. This is why the word is spelled with E-X. That's why you spell exit E-X. You're going out the door. It's why it's called an exoteric, the outer knowledge, not the core knowledge, the outer knowledge on the periphery. Whereas those who create characters like that have the esoteric Bible, which means the inner hidden knowledge away from the masses. You know, the average Joe and Joanne. You see, until some of us, a few of us come along in each generation, like Malcolm X did. Malcolm X came along and was hip to both of us. He was hip to both of them so much so that they had to assassinate him because he understood the esoteric as well as the exoteric. And this is where we at with it. So that's the whole point of this movie. Right? And that ain't Will Smith's first rodeo in terms of who create the characters that Will Smith's going to play. Right? Even Wesley Snipes. And I dig the brother. He narrated a documentary by Dr. John Henry Clark. You know, Wesley Snipes read books that I have. or you know, those of us who considered black consciousness or African-centered consciousness and whatnot. You know, one of the ways he was trying to give back for Hollywood cast typing him was by creating the Blade character, the black superhero. Right? And what did he do? Remembering in his subconscious, remembering that the roles he was given by white creators put him alongside who? White women. So when he created his own production company, not only was it his own production company, but it was the name of the production company as well. Amen Ra Films. That is the double name of what in ancient Kemet, what the white man called Egypt, in ancient Kemet. That was two of the names that they referred to God as. Whereas the white so-called Egyptologist, the so-called white expert on ancient Egypt, tells you that they had gods, that Ra was a god and Amen was a god, which is a lie. It is sheer propaganda. So what did he do? He made his first Blade movie. And he put a black woman alongside that Blade character. And what did she do? Peek this out. What did she do? Wesley Snipes is familiar with the Isis and Osiris story. Don't bet against him not being familiar. He put Isis and Osiris in the movie in black form. In the first Blade movie, boom, he got captured, right? And he got put in the situation where he had got his blood was being drained from him. And so his character, his partner, gets thrown into this pit. Right? Gets thrown into this pit. Where in the pit, you know, there's like this, sort of like, you know, like these creatures, right? You know, these vampires and whatnot. And so in this pit, she'd come face to face with somebody that early in the movie had broken her home, disguised himself as a pig. And who comes to rescue her? Her knight in shining armor, which was Wesley Snipes' character, Blade. So that's what he was attempting to do. That's what he was doing, putting a black superhero in on the big screen from the comics and putting alongside him a black partner is as far as we can take it, right? She resurrects him. She reconstitutes him like Isis did Osiris by giving him what? Some of her blood. Brought him back to full strength to go kick some of ass. Can't make this up. And this is the impact. And I know a lot of us watch those Blade movies. And we did those Blade movies because deep down inside, we know that Blade is kicking in white people ass. They just disguised as vampires, and they got some flunkies with them. They got a black flunky, they got a Latino flunky, they got a Chinese looking flunky who he gets into a karate match with and whips his ass. See, that was his attempt to try to combat the social engineering of black youth, young people, by creating those characters. So he made another Blade movie, and then another Blade movie, right? Now, it just so happened to be that after he made these movies, got a black production company called Amin Ra, they would have rather him named it after somebody white instead, or some white figure, like, or call it Apollo, or call it Hercules, or whatever. Right? Even though those are black gods too, godheads. But at some point, he'd come under that, you know, and whatnot, you know. But he'd come under attack, you know, as a result, that was the blowback. That was a subtle blowback for that. And there's a subtle blowback for it. And so going back to Will Smith, you see this character, and in the end, they end up together. They end up together. And they walk away into the sunset, end up together. And he played in another movie before that, another movie before that. Now, even in the subconscious, sometimes we could be on automatic pilot, right? We could be on automatic pilot. What the movie? Escapes my mind. Wait in the Exhale, I believe, is the movie. They put Wesley Snipes in that movie. And they end up the scene where they're at a bar, right? So the black woman, you know, she's having a time with her black man. Now, who's the creator waiting in there? Who's the creator? Keep that in mind. Now, the scene where she goes to the bar and they wind up this, that, and the, oh, you're going through it too. Yeah, I'm going through it too. Oh, yeah, well, you know, my wife, I think his wife, he said his wife died of cancer or she's dying of cancer. Who? She's a white woman. You see, and you see the sort of okay, this is as close as we're going to get with you here, Wesley, at a bar with a black woman. You see? So this is the type of social, and we even it's been done so much, the repetitions. We don't need them you turn yonder here. You automatically do. That's because of the condition has been decades of it, several centuries of it. And again, we wonder why young people out there doing what they're doing. You know, we got a lot of people who got these shows and whatnot, big time on earth. Does this type of shit ever come up, even in moderation? But yet we want the young people who are 18 above to go down and vote for their man or their sister. You know, they frat brother or their sorority sister or their Masonic brother or their Eastern Star sister. You know, it's incredible. It's incredible, like something but nothing. There's no reciprocity there. This is a lopsided relationship within our own ranks. And so here's this Margot Robbie. Now, being put in as the big cinema, Barbie on the big screen, you know. You think that's coincidence? You think that somebody didn't design it that way, or they, you know, why would they choose her? Who is she supposed to be? Oh, this is supposed to be the new hot actress that everybody's supposed to. you know, go head over heels for. We're supposed to be in awe of her. Now, I mentioned Barbie here, this Barbie shit. Of course, the little Barbie doll has been around for a number of decades. Escapes my mind the name of the company, but I'm thinking about Mattel. I can't get it. I don't know if I'm right about that. Well, anyway, you know, I remember this, you know, when I was you know, a little lad, you know. And you know the Barbie doll and stuff, wasn't it? And then of course at some point in the 90s, I believe, or something or whatever, that white company decided they was gonna get us to believe that we had arrived, or that America had been changed, that you know, that they can now change their ways and be human, or like they really made a sincere move, but after listening to the sociologists and the impact of the white doll on the black girl's mind, even in South Africa during that time, the so-called apartheid system was no different, no more, no less than what they referred to as Jim Crow here, and slavery before that, what they referred to in India as the caste system, where the darker skinned people at the bottom of the ladder, at the bottom of the pole, and the lighter skinned people, the pale skinned ones, are at the top. So much so that a certain black population were referred to as untouchables, and literally untouchable. It's so vicious that those who are touchable are forbidden to literally touch an untouchable, lest they be defiled. I mean, I can't make this shit up. I seen a documentary one time about that. And this white camera crew go there, and this white boy, and he's a whole ocean of young children he's around. And so, you know, boys normally naturally play with one another, but there's this one group, and then the white man, he realized what time it is. So look what he does. He tries to get the little boy to hug, put his arm around the other little child, and I think he has like a translator in the background. You can't see him. You know, all you can see is the little boys. And so he tries to get this little boy to put his arm around this other little dark-skinned boy. And the little child is shaking his head like, no, I'm not supposed to, I can't do that. Literally, I can't make this shit up. Literally saw this. And so that's what it is there, that the children go through there, and any of the black children, and any go through there. You see what I'm saying? So it's a whole international system. So in Southern Africa, this fictitious place that they call South Africa, this fictitious country that they call South Africa, it was an experiment. And where they got the little girls, they lined them up and they get a desk and they put a white doll on there and a black doll on there, and they asked the little girls to choose which one was the pretty doll and which one was the ugly doll, and 9 out of 10 of them chose the white doll. And so here these sociologists want to come and want to write a report and write a book and whatnot, make money off of that shit, get rich off of that. You know, give their credentials up and all this kind of stuff, make names for themselves on that kind of misery, you know. And so the doll maker come to figure that they would try to, you know, like they always give us this liberalism, you know, this liberalism, this lip service, this rhetoric shit about change and making change, and we're all together and all this kind of shit, you know. The only time that niggas ain't niggas is when they got to go to war, or the Olympics or something like that. You know, they ain't niggas. They're giving a day off, you know, or whatnot. When you get the weekend off, or the week when the Olympics is on, niggas get the week off, you know. Or is it some boogeyman, some Machiavellian boogeyman, niggas get a week off, you know. We're all Americans all of a sudden. When that shit cooled down, okay, we back to nigga status. Real talk, man, real talk. And this ain't no rhetoric. This is no rhetoric. You know, This is from history. We have to make anything up. This is from history. You know, don't take my word for it. Just take a good glance at it, and you tell me. You know, again, if anybody want to, you know, question, comment, or whatnot, for or against, you know, hit the one on your phone, and we'll get you on. But this is in overdrive. This is an overdrive. And so it goes back to black women believing that they have nappy hair. You know, so we got to go, you know, and get the, you know, the old straightening comb back in the day. And the straightening comb, of course, Madam C.J. Walker, who I believe was the first woman millionaire in America, to my understanding. You know, the social engineering of the black female girl. She can't see anything. She can see anything other than herself. She can't see herself. And again, there was no bitches and hoes that came from Africa. Bitches and hoes is an internalized concept. Bitches and hoes is something that the European has already been doing to his women. He had already had that attitude against his women before he even came here. And so the internalization of the colonizer onto the colonized mind. And it was obvious that black women would suffer from that. So much so, look, we done been conditioned so much, male and female, that you hear sisters, you know, referring to themselves as that. And the thing about it, not necessarily in an adversarial way. You know what I'm saying? And that's just like for the brothers. You know, even I'll say, you know, somebody I've been knowing for a long time, man, my nigga. And that's the equivalent of me saying brother. You know? And I'm an adult, conscious of it. And so it becomes a responsibility on the part of a peaceful political party to educate our people, our young people. And this is what this is in Defense of People Radio Political Education Class. It's a platform where we believe in politicizing the people. And there may be some non-blacks listening. You know, trying to understand the black dilemma. You know, trying to understand the black dilemma. One other thing, yeah, that comes to mind is these unreality TV shows. Let me say that again. These unreality TV shows. The first one that they came up with was Flavor of Love, featuring the world famous Flavor Flav, or my favorite hip hop group of all time, Public Enemy, the black militant rebel hip hop group that put a lot of us on game in the late 80s. You know, along with KRS-One, whose name is an acronym which stands for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Nearly Everyone, KRS-One. You know, so we had that balance in the 80s and the 90s, and then they started the operations. The CIA started their drug operations, which was the third one, the third time. You know, that they had unleashed the drug war on black people, black and brown people. And we had that balance. You know, we could listen to all type of lyrics, and it didn't necessarily drive us into the ditch. So there was a black CNN of hip hop, and then they had some black female hip hop artists. You know, Queen Latifah. You know, Queen Mother Rage, who didn't get the notor, what's that word? Who didn't get noticed or notarized or whatever, as much as Queen Latifah did. And then there was the transformation of Queen Latifah into the larger, you know, mainstream or corporate world. Next thing you know, she's in Revlon, right? And this sister named Queen Mother Rage was a member of X-Clan. X-Clan was a black nationalist group. One of his leaders, Professor X, Lumumba Carson, I think is his name. But on the stage name was Professor X. Lumumba Carson, I believe, was the son of Sonny Carson. Sonny Carson was one of the leaders of the, Robert Williams' book coming to mind, the book Negroes with Guns. You know, but these brothers was in the rural South, Deacons for Defense. And it was that influenced him to bring that to the hip hop world. And they brought the culture, you know, eastward, blackwards, you know, looking to Africa for one's pride, one's the different selves, you know, that you have, you know, self-worth, self-esteem, self-love, and so forth, you know. And they added the cultural aspect up to it. And not to say that Public Enemy didn't do it, but they, you know, they dressed the part. You know, they dressed the part. And so that was our balance as young people. You know, we weren't squeaky clean. You know, we did dumb shit too. You know, I knew cats. They were stick up kids and whatnot. You know, breaking your home, taking shit you wouldn't even know. You know, and whatnot. You know, snatching chains at the bus stop or at the school dance or whatnot. You know, and so forth. You know, but we still had that balance. And then the malt liquor companies kicked in. And you see this pipe sort of effect. You know, to steer the shit away going into 2000 or in the 90s, in the mid-90s, you see this thing. And, of course, at that time, Rick Ross had already kicked in. You know, Freeway Ricky, the real Rick Ross, not the fake Rick Ross, the rapper. And I say that because, you know, when people say Rick Ross, they say the real Rick Ross as opposed to the fake Rick Ross. They mean, you know, the name. And Rick Ross, the rapper, to my understanding, said he chose to call himself Rick Ross actually in honor of that Rick Ross. And in the meantime, the real Rick Ross kind of took some exception to using, you know, calling himself Rick Ross and whatnot. But just for the record, to clear that up. But so these operations kicked in. And like I said, this was the third drug operation, fundamental drug operation, you know, orchestrated by what the state refers to as the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. And their comrades and their, you know, their agent men, from Pablo Escobar on down. Pablo Escobar's son, as a matter of fact, has been going around speaking as of late or in recent years, after the betrayal and murder of his father by the CIA. And, you know, letting the cat out the bag that my father, you know, worked for the CIA. You know, it is what it is. And so it's escalated way much more, now it's gotten more sophisticated. And black women have gotten trapped up into it. The black female, you think, got trapped into it. You know, but the thing about that is this here. They are more in sync or you know, like, you know, and I hate to use this shit, but in the American, the American so-called history, which has been nothing but violence and decadence, you know, this thing about Bonnie and Clyde. You know, I believe Jay-Z and Beyonce, they made a song or something. They let the world know that they're Bonnie and Clyde and whatnot, so forth. Some of these female rappers, hip hop artists, like Lil Kim. There's another one. I heard this one recently. I seen somebody had an audio clip of her on YouTube, and I can't think of her name. I can't get her name. But you listen to her, and she literally talking about, yeah, you know, I'll pop for you. The whole nine, what she'll do, you know. I'll do what other gangsters, you know, who got guns say they, you know, scared to do. I can't get her name out, though. She's just like the lyrics, like, you know, she's, there's a clip that they showed. I think she's rapping on stage. I can't get her name out. But somebody had took that clip and was like, listen to what she's really saying, you know. And that's as a result of the social engineering, which in a sense is kind of wicked almost, where I would be willing to, to trust her that she won't go and run back and tell, you know, that we start the revolution tomorrow, you know. And that's the thing about it. And some would rather her, you know, go to school, go to college, you know, get a degree, and shit, be a nurse at Caesar Sinai Hospital in California or whatever, you know, work for a law firm or accountant at a bank or whatever, you know, a teller, you know, works at the bank, you know, whatever, you know, or the manager of a Popeyes or whatnot, you know. You know, this is the kind of social engineering that leaves a lasting impact, you know, on our females. But it's so much, you know, and like I said, you know, Flav initiated this whole thing. And the white social engineers, some of them white and white Jewish people, because you know, that VH1 and that Bravo channel, I think, are owned by white Jews, and so these unreality TV shows that have spun off from Flavor of Love. You know, then spun off in the Atlanta Housewives and Love, you know, I mean, you know, the other Love and Hip Hop and whatnot just was gone, you know, whatnot, right? You see in this Atlanta Housewives, you know, see these elegant women, you know, who's living, you know, the lifestyle, and they're exclusive elite friends and they elite circles and all this kind of bullshit, you know, that we don't have no work. No, I had no work in a minute, you know, none of that shit. All these persons who aspire to be rich and famous, you know, to be in front of the camera and willing to, in a sense, prostitute themselves, you know, prostitute their principles, in a sense. And at the same time, you know, dress like ladies, you know, whatnot. Now on the streets, and I'm going to tell you straight up, on the streets, you know, they wouldn't be seen as no different than the sisters on the street that, you know, get called hoes, you know. You know what I'm saying? Well, they wouldn't see no different. You know, they wouldn't see no different between them or them. This is the result of white male patriarchal rule. But you see that, you know, there's been this phenomenon of people videoing, you know, class confrontations between students and between a student and the teacher. You know, the kind of apocalyptic shit that's taken that then found its way to the classroom, the so-called cat fight. You know, dudes have, I've seen videos, you know, dudes filming these two sisters in a cat fight, you know. Some so with the, you know, the sister, you know, shirt done got ripped, you know, her chest has done been exposed, and even her, you know, her lower extremities and whatnot, you know, by, you know, being on the ground, and dudes just standing in his film. Wouldn't break them open, wouldn't do nothing. Period, at all. At all. And this is kind of apocalyptic shit that's like, it's fashion now. It's fashionable to do that. You know, it's fashionable. You know, the cat fight is shit, you know. And you see this, you'll get this on these shows, you know, with these women who's supposed to be, you know, wealthy, rich, elite, or whatever, you know, elegant ladies and whatnot, you know. You know what I'm saying? The fine furniture and the cars and the jewelry and the gowns and whatnot. You know, they have circles who they hang out with and all kind of shit. And we wonder why our young girls are out there doing what they're doing. It's an incredible display. On one end, to see the shit, and on the other end, to pretend that you don't see it. And you can't be one of the things part of the solution or part of the problem. You know, one other thing I wanted to mention. You know, I talked about violence. Like H-Rap Brown, formerly known as H-Rap Brown, who was still commonly held as a political prisoner in one of the U.S. gulags. The man, Jameer El-Amin, once said that when you put violence in perspective, he said, violence is American as apple pie. I know the whole thing about baseball, blue skies, and apple pies. You know, Chuck D said on one of the songs that he wrote, I think the name of the song is called Hitler Day, or a song, I think, before that on that. But anyway, his point was that he was describing, he's putting the American flag into perspective. He has said that the red is for the, you know, the blood that been shed from us. The white is for the obvious. The stripes are for the whip marks on our backs. And the stars is what we were seeing when we was getting our ass beat. And so he summed that American flag up in proper perspective. And we agree with him 100%, 200%. He also has a song. We did a solo album, and he had a song called "Can You Kill the Nigger in You?" You know, where he speaks to what's been said tonight. You know, but the violent aspect of it, and the constant perpetuation of it, in the highly technologically advanced video games that have been projected on to our young people today. And we're wondering why our young people are out there committing these acts of violence on one another. Every year there's this convention. There's this video game convention held every year. And not only do, like, these, you know, these companies or whatnot or whatever, you know, these tech companies and whatnot, but military people show up. Military people show up. And, yeah, you know, it's like a child's paradise. It's a young person's paradise. You know, what boy wouldn't want to go there, you know, 9, 10 years old? 11, 12, 13. What boy would, knowing he can play video games all day and they ain't got to pay for the shit? You can go from one, you know, thing to the next. And the one that they made, was it Grand Theft Auto, I believe? And that's the one that focuses on the West Coast. And who do they get to play? I mean, who do they get to give a voice to it? Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg. And so he profited from that. But someone will say, well, you know, yeah, I'm aware of that. But are you aware of the fact that he has a little league football team and that he, you know, he's giving back to his community, you know, and whatnot? Because could it be an attempt at redemption, you know? Recently, I was told about, and I love his brother's name, but D1, from New Orleans, hip-hop artist. And he was influenced by my partner in rhyme or hip-hop, Truth Universal, who hasn't gotten all the, like I said, all the fanfare as a Lil Wayne. And that's for obvious reasons. Truth has spent his whole rap career, hip-hop career, his music production, rapping about the things that we're talking about tonight, you know. But D1 recently was on one of these little syndicated radio shows, whatever. I believe his name is Sway, whatever. And, you know, you talked about the effects of, you know, the rappers, the music on the young people. And to my understanding, he had caught, you know, some flack or some blowback from Rick Ross. And I can't think of it as on the tip of my tongue. But, Jim Jones. And this is the type of response that one would get for trying to take a stand or to use his voice. Like some of these reactionaries in sports call themselves doing, you know, over the spate of high-tech lynchings and executions of black men unarmed by the pig across America. No. We had that same issue, I'm not going to say dilemma. We had that same issue phenomenon in the 80s and the 90s. Of course, you know, Public Enemy was the group, and you know, didn't too many people sort of and it wasn't that they were spitting fire at anybody. It was critical to a certain extent, you know, and that people knew that what they were saying, that was the right thing to do, you know. And this is the thing that takes place, that happens to us. And people who know the scriptures, you know, they'll tell you in a flash, it can't serve two masters. But understanding that this is a master-slave relationship and a relationship based on power. Yeah. But those shows particularly portray women as what? You know, any of those sisters, you know, whether they're 50s or down to their 20s or whatever, any of them given a moment in front of the camera to speak on something other than the latest entanglements that's been going on, or these staged confrontations, hair pulling and drink slinging and all kind of shit. You know, where they have a whole group of security behind the camera, man. You know, I was watching one where Jim Jones' Queen, they were actually, you know, they filmed like some behind the scenes shit or something. Where I saw the one where Jim Jones is acting up and whatnot, some shit. And the white Jew is there and he's saying something. But there's this one where I saw his queen did an interview. And she said out of her own mouth that you're going to put me in a room and bring somebody in there knowing we don't get along. Knowing we don't get along, you're going to put her right across from me. And she let the world know right there that they set those scenarios up. And what is the ultimate goal? A cat fight. A cat fight. But what if that cat fight had become conscious, the two individuals had become conscious of themselves and their position within the structure and turn that cat fight into a solidarity fight against the state? And that's what our mission is. That's what we envision. It's a goal not only for us, but collectively, all of us collectively. You know, but it's a constant thing. And unless you know that these executives could care less about our young people, they could care less. You know, you establish this, your forefathers established this so-called country on violence. And these are the inheritors of it. And the things that they must do to stay on top, the sky's the limit. And so this shit that they call social engineering now. to keep us as the bastard children of white violence, which has been turned into a science more than ever. They got smart bombs. Now they got smart phones. Some people want to have a smart house with a smart television. And the funny part about it all is, what's so smart about the phone? If the phone has been designed to work against you, which means you'll end up dumbed down by the smartphone or the smart television or the smart house to preoccupy your mind from what? From the constant reality that faces us collectively every day, and where our young people are the reflections, male and female, of historical American decadence. And you keep them in the dark, lest they overthrow you, lest they overthrow the system. They become conscious of themselves in the system and realize what it is in the whole, and to understand how it works and the different wings of it, and to take some of our own people that are just like us and get them to go along with it. Providing that they can live in Eastover, or they can live in the Hamptons, or they can, you know, they can live a exquisite life. And then turn right back around and say, I don't know what's wrong with the young people. It's like they don't care about anything. You know, we was coming up, we wasn't like that. Bullshit. It may not be to the extent that it is today. But it just didn't jump up out of the sea on its own. It just didn't rise up out of nowhere. There's no such thing as nowhere. There's always a somewhere. Everything comes from somewhere. But we've been conditioned to say, or he just came out of nowhere. And it's gotten so much to the point where the little sisters, you know, they have their own little cliques. You know, they got their own little cliques. And what are they doing? You know, they hustling. You know. And the other side is doing what? In their minds, they don't need a man. And then there's some sisters who are out in these communities trying to make a difference. And they're being part of the solution, you know, instead of part of the problem. And some sisters who stand toe-to-toe with the pigs holding a rifle in their hands, yelling, "Black power. Fuck the police." And they got brothers. You couldn't catch them out there with that. Let alone holding a weapon, exercising their right to bear arms. Yeah, so we've reached the end. I enjoy doing what I do, you know, as the voice of the Peaceful Little Party. It's more to it than it meets the eye. You know, we'll see you next week, same black time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with another topic in defense of the people radio, brought to you by Peaceful Little Party. I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat Turner, of this revolutionary organization, and my co-host, our brother Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our Minister of Communication, Sister Imon O'Shone on the ones and twos. We'll see you next week. We out.
Peace. I'm called Professor X, the Overseer. In the early 1900s, a brother set out on voyage. His mission, black nationalism. His oath, freedom or death. In the 60s, brothers like Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, the mission, black nationalism, the oath, freedom, or death. In the 90s, the mission, black nationalism, the messengers, X-Clan, the movement, Black Watch, the oath, freedom, or death. By the way,
freedom or death. Shall all be moved. Vanglory. This is protected by the red, the black, and the green. With the key.
Abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word. A stick called verb, a black steel nerve. Teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really?